Welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first bilingual show for CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. And today, we have a special, as every third Monday, we have the Social Justice Series. And today we're going to talk about racial justice and how to be an ally as a white person. So let me read the description kind of as a way of introducing ourselves. Hopefully, we are all becoming more aware of white supremacy and the whole world of systemic and structural racism. In this episode, during Black History Month, Laura and Jake discuss how racism is tangled up in everything and how white people can work to disengage white privilege and demonstrate solidarity with people of color. I am very honored to welcome my co-host for the Social Justice Series, Jake Bradley. Jake, dear friend, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Laura, I'm good. It's always fun to join you in this.
Always fun. And today is a topic that is really near and dear to my heart, obviously, as an Indigenous woman, as a so-called person of color, and as an immigrant, but most importantly, as a person who is here sharing knowledge and wisdom and you know, focusing on sharing these important topics with people. So the first thing that caught my eye out of that beautiful description that you gave us for today's show is obviously that word, the P word, you know, the feared P word, you know, that is privilege. And it seems to gain a reaction almost immediately from people when you mention privilege. So first of all, Jake, what is privilege?
Well, so I've learned a lot about privilege from lots of folks along the way. So none of these are my ideas or constructs per se. But privilege is a thing that we sort of think of as a set of unearned benefits that are given to people who fit into a particular group, a social group or some other group. So the important thing is that they're unearned, which means that you get these things that we consider privilege, not because of anything that you've done, not based on merit, not based on anything else about you, just sort of luck or happenstance or whatever it is that you think is the thing that makes you be born into whatever identities you experience or manifest. So, you know, someone is born with something that fits into one or more races as they are sort of constructed by how we think about those. And even the idea of race was constructed by white people to think about the world and other people and to think about how and to sort of find ways to categorize how white people were superior to people who are not considered by them to be white and who were then sort of put into this other construct of a different race. So the whole idea of race is even sort of made up. It's made up by white people to differentiate us or whatever. And, you know, right now, because of Black History Month, we're talking about racism and white privilege as one of the kinds of privilege. But people can have privilege based on anything about themselves. And I can be a person who has privilege for some things about my identity and then experiences lack of privilege or oppression because of other things about my own identity. Privilege is, you know, that word you might have heard lately or might use called intersectional. You know, it there are lots of different things that make a person a person. And those things have to do with constructs of race, constructs of gender, constructs of nationality, you know, and for example, I, as a person who is a citizen of this geopolitical construct called the United States of America, have privilege that people who were not born with that or somehow acquired that along the way don't have. So privilege is what everyone should routinely be able to expect to experience. It's not special rights. It's not things that someone gets because they're a good person or because they work hard. It's what everyone should have. Privilege is, but it's something that some people get and other people don't, right? Right. And so when I talk about white privilege, that includes things that I am able to experience about the world and about my life as a white person, that everyone of all races, of all skin tones, of all identities should be able to experience the same as I do, but they don't, they can't, because of these constructs of race and because of white supremacy and because of how that manifests in white privilege. All of us humans have privilege based on some part of our identity, you know, theoretically, and white privilege is a big piece of that for sure for people who are white. But you mentioned, Laura, that, you know, there's a lot of fear around this or reaction about it. And that's true. I think it's easy to feel confused or defensive about the concept of privilege, about acknowledging our own privilege. And having privilege doesn't mean that you're not a good person. It doesn't mean that you aren't trying to be fair and just and forthright with the people around you. It doesn't mean you're trying to compete with other people or get an unfair advantage. It doesn't mean you haven't worked hard to get what you have. It doesn't mean you don't deserve to get what you have, because everyone deserves the kinds of things that are part of privilege, like safety, like feeling like you belong and are welcome, like fairness, all the kinds of fairness and lack of discrimination that come along with privilege. So you can be a good person and be a fair and decent person, but sort of benefit from the way that the system was set up to serve you or to give sort of advantages or shortcuts or admission passes or things like that to you that other people don't have. And recognizing that you have privilege might inspire defensiveness in you, or confusion or overwhelmshin. That's a word that I've maybe made up or whatever, but it suits my life well, overwhelmshin. But, you know, part of being an ally is being able to recognize your privilege, and part of being a white person is learning how your whiteness makes your life safer and easier than the lives of people of color in various tangible ways that can be observed and experienced, can be chronicled in, you know, like a privilege inventory or a thing like that. And we can talk more about that if you like.
I love that you tap into that privilege inventory, because the very first time that I heard somebody say having privilege doesn't make you a bad person was when, in my formation as a minister for Circle Sanctuary, we took the class on, and I'm going to butcher the word, hierarchy and privilege.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember you saying having privilege doesn't make you a bad person. And, you know, with all the intersectionalities that I exist within me or about me, I thought for sure I had zero privileges. And it wasn't until you conduct us to take this privilege inventory that I realized I have privileges of education. I have privileges of being bilingual. I have a privilege as a cisgender woman. Not to be confused that women are not oppressed, because cisgender women have been oppressed our whole lives, but comparing cisgender women and transgender women and queer people being a cisgender female femme presenting woman gives you privilege, and to learn all those privilege that you have and exist with and that you're not even conscious about, it gave me a complete new perspective on how I move about in the world. And then understanding that white privilege does not make white people bad people, but that what they do with that privilege. Now that's a different story and a different commentary. But yeah, I highly recommend people to find a way to check, quite literally, check your privileges, and then see what, if you're interested in actually becoming more conscious about, and how can you utilize that privilege for the good of the community. But in this case and in this show, we're talking specifically about white privilege and how it affects every single living being on the planet, that white privilege exists, and how can we first kind of like bring attention to it and then see what we can do about it. So what does actual white privilege look like?
What does it look like? One of the central parts about privilege is not recognizing the privilege, because you just go along through your life and everything seems normal to you. And that's a big part of privilege, is feeling like you are normal and your life is normal and your experience or your perspective is the only way there is, or is the normal way, or is a better way than somebody else's, or whatever. If you don't recognize your privilege, that is all part and parcel of having privilege. Part of the way that systems of oppression are set up is they're sort of predicated on people who have privilege and power not being aware of it, not recognizing it, not accounting for it or whatever, and just sort of carrying on sort of mindfully, mindlessly, or sort of unawares, and thereby sort of being complicit in inadvertently or purposely continuing to set up and sort of replicate the systems of oppression that there are. So like some of the kinds of things that manifest as white privilege, for example, are I can look at media, like mainstream media, television shows, news, and I find people of my race represented fairly in a wide range of roles. There's no assumption that they're smart or not smart, legal or not legal, moral or not moral, industrious or lazy, or anything at all. People don't have negative assumptions sort of profiled on white people. And, you know, usually the people who are reading the news, people who are, you know, often the teachers that we encounter, people who are considered the sort of role models or whatever in society are more likely going to be white people. And so I'm more likely going to see myself represented in those. The schools, you know, that I grew up in taught about my race and heritage, and they presented it in positive ways. You know, there are these ideas like manifest destiny and other things like that, that make me and my people be the hero of my story. And every good thing that happened to us, you know, was something that we deserved, that was our right or should happen to us. And there was no consideration of other people's experience in that process. Or, you know, the vast array of the way the world is set up so that some people have to pay a cost, pay a wage so that my life can be as easy and positive as it is. You know, this country was built on the back of slaves, for example, and lots of the clothes I wear are, you know, made by people who aren't earning a living wage at all and are sort of exploited to provide these clothes for me. Lots of the services I consume are provided by poor people and people of color who are not being paid well, certainly not being paid a living wage or being paid as much as I get paid so that I have this kind of expendable income so that I can spend it on these things. These are all parts of white privilege. I can take a job. Sorry, go ahead.
I have to say something that I have said before a million times. All your food, everything that you eat in the United States has been touched by the hands of undocumented workers, whether they're Mexican, South American, Central American, or from other countries, because there are also undocumented people from other countries, not only from Mexico, Central and South America. But everything we eat, Jake, whether you go to a fast food restaurant, to an organic restaurant, to an organic store or a regular grocery store, chances are it's been touched by the hands of undocumented people who are very, very unprivileged. So we are all intertwined, and it's amazing how we take a blind eye to it. But I digress. I'll let you continue.
Please. Well, no, that's exactly right. And you know, I can complain about the fact that salads cost $10 these days. But if my salad had ingredients in it that were grown sustainably, and the people who grew, harvested, prepared and transported those ingredients to me and sold them to me at the grocery store, if they were all paid a living wage, that salad would cost me $35 probably, right? And so part of my privilege as a white person is to gripe about the money that I have to spend when I have enough money to go to a restaurant, of course, not for the last 2 years or whatever, but, you know, go to a restaurant and buy a salad. And I have many, many, many places in my neighborhood where I can go and get fresh groceries, even organic groceries, and many places I can go to a restaurant where, you know, a whole array of restaurants, including restaurants of all sorts of ethnicities and cultures that I can go to. And, you know, I'm considered a sort of enlightened or interesting or adventuresome person if I go to what's considered an ethnic restaurant or whatever, because my culture and my food and my cuisine is considered normal where I am, you know. And by where I am, I mean, you know, in this geopolitical construct of a nation here.
Yeah, because everything else is exotic. We are exotic. But anyway, please continue.
Well, just, you know, those are the kinds of things, you know, like lots of people of color just know, they just know in their bones that every time they leave their home, they run various risks of being profiled and racialized and criminalized by people around them. They can't go in a store without people following them around and assuming they're going to shoplift, even though people who statistically are more likely to shoplift are white people. They, you know, they can't drive in a car that might have a taillight out without worrying not only that they'll be stopped in that car, but that because of their taillight, they may literally end up in prison or dead because of having a taillight out, because of their race. That's not a thing that white people ever have to think about. And Black people especially, but people of color have to think about that every time they leave their house, every time they move around in the world at all. They're just constantly doing that kind of border crossing, you know, into zones and areas where they are not considered the norm, and they're not considered acceptable in various ways, you know, where they're considered to be suspect or whatever. You know, I, as a white person, can use my credit cards or checks without anybody worrying that I'm not going to be able to pay my bills. I have the privilege of good credit, which comes from various things about how the economy was set up so that my people could amass credit and wealth all throughout the history of the United States, and Black people couldn't even own a home, couldn't even get a loan for the very basic things that were considered part of the American dream. I can take a job with my employer and not have to worry that they hired me for affirmative action or that anybody's going to think that I didn't deserve my job or merit it in some way. I can get into a university or get an award and nobody is going to suspect that I was given that for any reason other than the fact that I, you know, earned or deserved that award, despite the fact that the truth is that white people have an unfair advantage in getting recognized for our accomplishments. And if, you know, if, for example, the museums weren't full of white people's art, there would be a lot more people of color's art in there, and white people would have to be more special or more original or whatever to get their art recognized in the same way if it was, you know, fair for everyone. So, you know, I can live my life in the company of people like me and people that I feel comfortable with who are not going to judge me if I want to. I don't have to like find ways to make myself invisible or more palatable to other people so that I can carry on with my existence and try to be safe or, you know, successful in my life. Those are all parts of white privilege, but you can find lots of white privilege inventories on the internet. They have been around for a few decades now since Peggy McIntosh, I think, is the person who developed this idea of a white privilege inventory. You know, she had an article or a study called Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack, I think it was called. But, you know, she was talking about how, for example, being a white person or really any sex, any kind of sector of privilege is, you know, having a backpack that's full of tickets and passports and blank checks and tools and maps and things like that that help you navigate the world that someone else doesn't have. So they have to figure out how to navigate the world without those passes and cards and maps and blank checks and things like that. Again, it doesn't mean that every person who has privilege has had an easy life. It doesn't mean that there isn't real suffering. It doesn't mean that you haven't worked hard. It doesn't mean you're not a good person. It just means that you don't have to work quite as hard as other people to get the same benefits, to get the same fair shake, to get the same chances or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And exactly what you said is really important for me to point out, like at this moment on the show, I, as a immigrant, indigenous Mexican woman, have experienced, right, the situations where I don't have privilege because the world is designed to serve white people. But by no means have I a sliver of understanding what a Black person goes through. And it's completely different because, again, different levels of privilege and different levels of how you are treated or mistreated or what people assume about you because you are this or that shade. And that affirmative action thing, it just hit hard when you mentioned it because I remember telling somebody who I'm not going to name when I said that I was going to go into the ministry training program for Circle and immediately answered to me, like, of course, you're going to get into the program because you're the only brown person. And I was like, what? I mean, and people say those kind of things without a reflection, without thinking how that is going to impact the other person, how that is going to hurt the other person. And without checking the huge amount of privilege that they have to be able to others that are such things. And also how we stereotype people based on how different from the norm, big air quotes. I love when people say normal is just a washer and dryer setting because there's no such thing as normalcy. Diversity is what's normal. But the system is made to have a default, which is like cisgender, male, white, And then everything else falls under that category. And the more femme and the more dark, the further away it goes from that privilege that the system was created upon. And you know, when the time come to celebrate Mexican heritage or Hispanic heritage, then we will talk about that. But we are just trying here to learn how to accommodate and utilize our privilege to support Black folks in the United States and elsewhere, but especially here in the United States. Something that has really made me dismay is when people say, "Oh my God, but here in the United States, we were not that racist. This racism started with the ex-president in 2016." And I'm like, no. We have been telling you for decades that there is racism in this country, and the fact that you are so amazed by all this blatant racism that we are experiencing in 2022 is a testament to how privileged you are, you know. What can we do, Jake? Because sometimes it feels like we're just swimming against the current. So, what do you think that are things that people can start doing to turn the
Well, let
tide?
me just say to put a finer point on that. Right now, in the United States, there's a lot of talk about voters' rights, right? And there are groups of people that we won't name who are working really hard to suppress voter rights because it's in their best interest to have whole communities of people less likely to turn up at the polls or, to be discouraged and disenfranchised, literally, because that's what the word is, not being able to vote, not having a voice or a role in the political process that is in charge of you and your life and the area where you live or whatever. But, there's all this debate about the filibuster, right, in the Senate and how that's right now standing in the way of a voters' rights bill passing. Or it has recently. And the filibuster was invented, right, during an era where, in order to keep white Southern landowners in the union, in the country, there had to be provisions where the government would not pass any laws that the white Southern landowners were not willing to tolerate. And so the filibuster literally was invented to suppress voters' rights laws and to keep voter suppression in place. And that was a very long time ago. And here we are in 2022, in the very exact same situation that we were in, that one party of people does not want a voters' rights bill to pass, and they're using their filibuster privilege or power to be able to keep it from passing because they don't want Black people and Brown people to be able to vote. Because if Black people and Brown people vote, then they are less likely to keep the power and wealth and privilege that they have amassed. And they're going to have to work harder to be civil servants and not just rest on their laurels and privilege or whatever. So, to get to your question, what can we do? If you begin to become aware that you are a person of privilege, and again, we all are, practically everyone has some axis of privilege, even though you might have many axes of your life where you experience oppression or lack of privilege. To me, one of the most important things is to start to examine how racism and white supremacy has functioned in our economy, in the laws that we have in this nation, in the disparities that there are in healthcare options, in housing options, in education, in right to due process. Just do a little bit of research and start to notice. For example, that 90% of people in the United States who use illegal substances are white people, and 90% of the people in this nation who are incarcerated are Black people and brown people. If you don't believe me, just do some research, right? It's not hard to uncover these things. They are astonishingly obvious. The whole idea of redlining and how there were neighborhoods set up where no one could get a loan to own their house, and that was on purpose set up to hold Black people down. It's not hard to find that trail, and sort of educate yourself about these things. To me, that's a piece of it, is however painful, confusing, overwhelming it might be for you, just take your blinders off and dive right in. That's the wilderness that Black people live in every day. That is the state of affairs that people of color have no chance to take a break from or deny in this nation. So part of how I do allyship as a white person is I take off my blinders and I take a hard look at how everything in this nation was set up to serve white people and to give them the things that they need and to make it harder for Black people to get there.
And if I may add real quick, Jake, do not expect Black people and brown people and any person of color to go through the emotional labor of educating you. Not one Black person in this planet owes you knowledge. You want knowledge? You want to know what racism is about? Question your friend who makes the racist joke. Question your allyship to someone who benefits from oppression. Question why are you afraid of certain type of people on the street? Do not approach. Not everybody is Laura Gonzalez that will willingly talk about race and oppression and social justice. The majority is people don't want to talk about it anymore, because when they talk about it, they are silenced, they are mocked, they are ignored, and they are dismissed. So this is literally white on white conversation, white on white questioning. And thank you, Jake, for mentioning that, because that is super important, that we don't go to Black folks and, hey, explain racism to me. Like, come on.
Yeah, thanks for putting some clarity to that, because when I'm saying check it out, do your research, I mean do your research, talk to other white people about it, educate other white people, and do your own learning instead of asking someone to explain it to you. And then here, you know, it's the job of someone of privilege to be focused on people of your same group, to educate and hold accountable people in your same group, instead of asking people of color or people who don't have privilege or safety to do that education or to hold you accountable. And one place where the rubber really meets the road on this is that white people need to be talking to their white kids about racism. And you might say, but Jake, it's really awkward and uncomfortable for me to have to talk to my white kids about racism and privilege and things like that. Well, imagine how incredibly awful it is for a Black person to have to say to their little Black son, you be careful. You be careful when you go out there, because those cops are not on your side. Mm-hmm. To have to explain about all the kinds of police brutality, all the other kinds of things that those kids are experiencing in real life every day, and explain that that's because of racism, and explain that you can't trust people, and that you can't feel safe, and that you're not ever going to feel safe, and that you're not ever going to get a fair shake in life. Imagine telling your child that, and use that empathy to remind you how important it is for white people to tell their white kids about racism. Tell the kids and the people in your coven, in your spirituality group, in your running club, you know, talk to people about racism. Shine a light on the lie that white supremacy and white privilege is, and how much it shapes our daily lives. those are big pieces of allyship, but also, you know, encourage your library to have books with the Coretta Scott King Medal on them in the children's library section. Make sure that you're reading those to white kids, you know, your own white kids, or buying those for your nieces and nephews who are white and things like that. You know, read books written about racism, written by people of color. The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander, for example. That's a great place to start understanding how racism functions in this nation, and in our history, and so on. And, you know, Black people's, this is Black History Month, and Black history is everyone's history. But racism is everyone's history. And it's really important to just own how that shows up in your own lived experience and in the world that you live in around you. Also, you know, we need to be vigilant about racial profiling in ourselves and in other people. If your friend is the one saying that racist joke, like Laura just said, then call them out. Call them out and call them in to allyship and to awareness. And you know, there, that's just an example of how to be an ally, not just when people of color are around, but at all times. Never tolerate profiling or hate speech. Never tolerate racist jokes or assumptions that you see yourself or someone else making about people based on their race. And you know, point out as often as you can that the white perspective on life is not the only perspective, and things like that. That'll get you a long way towards real allyship and, you know, being more part of the solution to racism instead of a perpetuator of white supremacy.
And one thing that I don't want us to miss saying, and I know I've heard you said it before, Jake, in the rare occasion, because it happens, right? In the rare occasion that there is a person of color that is a brown or a Black person speaking, and that they are speaking about these issues, do not speak over them. Listen. It is uncomfortable, like Jake said. Yeah, it is very uncomfortable. Think about how uncomfortable it is for those parents' children. So when you encounter that there is a Black or a brown person that are actually educating people and that they are out in the spotlight speaking about these things, don't talk over them. Do not talk over them. Listen to them and sit with your discomfort and learn. And that's the hardest part, is to sit with your discomfort. And then after that, you come out of the other side with more knowledge, with more wisdom, and hopefully with empathy and celebration of the diversity. Jake, this has been a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful show to do with you. Any closing thoughts or remarks that we haven't said just yet?
I think, you know, dismantling white supremacy is not all sad, ugly, depressing stuff. Like, you know, there's a whole world of awesome music you can listen to and great art that you can look at. You know, make it your plan to listen to music made by and for Black people every day during Black History Month. Watch some movies that are love stories that are, you know, feature Black people, for example. It's you will notice how hard it is to find that. Because that is not where Hollywood is putting its money, right? And we often aren't given the opportunity to see Black people as, you know, people who have crushes on other people or stuff like that, because most of the stuff that's out there is about crime and combat and things like that that feature Black people. So, you know, use Black History Month to find some ways to enjoy Black culture, to celebrate heroism as it has shown up in the struggle of Black people to make their lives work despite all of this that is set up against them. And figure out ways to sort of live out allyship as a verb, as an action word, that, you know, is a new way to sort of see the world around you. And hopefully someday we will get to a place where, you know, we're not tangibly in exactly the same place we were 200 years ago in this nation or whatever, if we each work on that.
And those are magnificent words. Allyship is a verb, and we need to all keep working on it. Thank you so much for everyone who listened. Thank you so much for everyone who will, whether you listen live or listen later, this social justice series is going to continue. As you hear me, I already said what September's topic is going to be. Jake, whether you like it or not, it's going to be Hispanic Heritage Month. And we are going to start by saying it's not Hispanic, but, you know, that's for September. Of course, in March, we're going to talk about women's rights, and that includes all women, transgender women as well. And we're going to continue here on doing the social justice series, and we hope to see you all soon. I invite you all to listen to all of the shows that are part of the CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. We, of course, have David and Janet Ewan. We have Deborah Rose doing Circle Talk and Moon Magic. We have the brand new Blue Marble with Charbert. We have Paganos del Mundo with all our collaborators around the world speaking Spanish and Portuguese. And we have, obviously, Selena Fox's Nature Mystic and Nature Spirituality. And yours truly, Lunatic Mondays, that inside of Lunatic Mondays, we have the social justice. I love it. I love you, Jake. Thank you so much for helping us navigate this racial equality allyship. And to everybody, have a wonderful Black History Month. Learn, 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 share, and never forget that you are loved. Bye-bye.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.